Good afternoon. This is my new program on Sunday's afternoon, which I called a radio salon. And I'm extremely pleased, privileged, and touch overwhelmed because I have a guest with us who is not only outstanding artist and a thinker, but just truly a special person. I would say that I have particularly great challenge to introduce her because she has this very unique multidimensional intellect, and with her totally unlimited abilities to feel and to internalize world, which she eventually expresses back to people, is beautifully diversified. The name of my guest is Nancy Ricker Schiff. And in my few moments of introduction, we will hear Nancy's story, and we will give her full opportunity to speak to us about her extremely diversified, multidimensional art, just as her vision of the world. I had the privilege to meet Nancy, and I would say that it was somewhat deceptive experience in the beginning because you have pleasure to meet very fragile, elegant lady who certainly represents eloquence and subtle manners right from the beginning. But this impression enriching immediately with a very strong tone of the power of her talent, intellect, and the freedom to use both. When I introduced myself, I immediately expressed to her my totally inspirational joy after I came across to her books. That prompted me to find her and actually to find the secret, to find the source of this strongly original, strikingly, totally unlike of any other books which have been published recently. The name of that book is Odd Jobs. I think in the past I told you my personal story, how I met a flutist who traveled around the world just using his flutes, and communication through music was his prime way of communication. Well, Nancy has many keys to the world, and she found herself very comfortably to communicate in the many levels. The prime level of her communication is her photography. This is like a second, maybe sometimes her first breath in life. And that book actually devoted to the photography of odd jobs. This is perfect opportunity for us trying to conquer limitations of the radio, use our imagination. And because this book is so incredibly sharply written, after we will talk to Nancy directly, I will give you a little sense and a little perfume of these titles, which are so spicy, they're already opening the major issue and major keys and the content of the book. She also, as I mentioned before, devoted herself to another writing and especially interest to people who not only pointed themselves in the history as a celebrity, and even though they are, but because of Nancy's tremendous profound interest and devotion to this category of people's personality, I have in my hands a treasure, truly treasure, of her work. It's called A Celebration of the 80s. And that segment of her work we will discuss in the second part of the program. I just wanted to give you a overview and to give you a taste how specially diversified this woman is and how free spirit she has. In fact, I don't think she has any limitations. If we can talk about true intellectual and spiritual democracy, I think this lady has a gift to carry this for all our pleasure. I'd like to introduce my very special guest, Nancy Ricker Schiff, and I just will ask her to talk in the beginning about herself, about her life, and just basically whatever she will find the pleasure and interest to share with us. Nancy, you are on.
Thank you, Elena. It's some introduction there. Talk about my life, how I fell into photography. It's a, you know, I didn't start photography till I was about 30 years old. So I firmly believe that, you know, anyone who's in their 20s can start their life over at any time, 30, 40, 50, whatever. But I started as an apprentice for two photographers who shared a studio. I collected unemployment, and this was 1976. They each paid me $10 a week, and it was probably one of the happiest years of my life because I was doing something for the very first time that I loved doing. And, you know, I've been, you mentioned my books, Odd Jobs and Odder Jobs, and the most important thing, I think, in one's job is if you enjoy doing it, it doesn't matter how much money you're making. Nothing else matters. You spend most of your time doing your work, so you really should be happy in it. My books, The Odd Jobs and Odder Jobs, were the two latest books I did. You mentioned A Celebration of the 80s. That was a book that came out in 1983, and they were portraits of famous and active octogenarians, people between the ages of 80 and 90. And that project came to me because I had been a model for a very famous painter. His name was Raphael Sawyer. And I photographed him many times, and he suggested I photograph some of the other artists. I did a portrait of Alice Neal. And a friend of mine looked at the photographs and said, "Why don't you do octogenarians?" And so I did. I started writing letters to all these elderly people. They had to be in their 80s. I realized I couldn't call them on the telephone, so I wrote a letter, and after I photographed Samson Raphaelson, the playwright and screenwriter, he suggested an opening line for me from my letter, which was, "Dear so-and-so, according to the records, you are an octogenarian." And then I explained what I was doing. And I have to admit that as I got further and further into the book and getting people to agree to be photographed, it got a lot easier because I could tell people in every letter who I already photographed and who was in the book.
Well,
I wondered if you wanted to.
Yes,
I will
ask you a few specific questions. I have to thank you because indeed you add something to the first description of mine regarding your first book. Indeed, the book was so successful that prompted you to write another book of Odder Jobs. Now, I will say that this program couldn't be more exciting in terms of having this polyphony of most serious, profound book of your a celebration of the ages. But in the same time, you indeed wrote this book about odd jobs. So it is beautifully confusing because we're going from somewhat humor and everyday modern life, undiscovered professions, and certainly extremely useful. And I like to get a little bit into details of that. But in the same time, what you described on your previous connections with this older generation of people, I like to ask you a few specific questions because I was particularly taken by the fact that when I looked at every individual, every portrait, I literally felt that I met these people, as I mentioned to you first time when you gave me the pleasure, and actually I have a present from Nancy. I own this book. In fact, unfortunately, we cannot buy anymore this book, so I feel a little bit of special because I truly come back to this book regularly. It's like a piece of a little human Bible for myself. So continue on commenting on this book. I like to express my immediate impression and perhaps connections with the Renaissance. I strongly feel that Rembrandt's pose of psychological description with a whole philosophy of the impressions and the whole message of life is so strongly coming from absolutely every personality. I feel that Nancy caught the moment of their real life, and yet from that very moment, we almost feel but the part of their life. I feel that all these people, almost like a natural family of Nancy's life, and yet it is only a photography. So I like to ask Nancy to what extent she can go to this intimate process to get this moment. What is the moment and where this moment creates a whole life message?
Well, it's interesting. I'm thinking now about the people in the octogenarian book. They also loved their work. And I'm drawing a correlation here now between that first book, A Celebration of the 80, and my later books, Odd Jobs and Odder Jobs. They were both portraits of people who loved their work, and that comes out in their expression and their faces. Of course, editing is always very important also. A photographer has to edit his work, and it's just as important as, or almost as important as taking the photograph. Because I don't know, maybe you've seen some people, they want to show you pictures, and they always show too much. You have to really narrow down your choice and pick the best one. Hopefully it's the best one. Sometimes I've even made mistakes, I think. I haven't chosen the correct one. But I just want to emphasize the importance of editing.
Well, editing, if I make a little parallel in music, when we are sweating in our own rights, trying to polish one phrase, this is like taking a photograph of that particular phrase. So our portrait is the composer, and composer is not with us any longer, but his music is. And in our previous programs, in fact, I was trying to reinforce the responsibility on the part of the performer that it is his or her combination of background schooling and total devotion to the composer's style. So that is, I think, maybe what you're talking about, because our working and process of polishing and creating nearly perfect image is editing. So if 10 times didn't help, you have to go for 11th one. Mm-hmm. And in your situation, however, I think it's even more challenging because your hero is alive. So how many times you can ask him or her to pose or to create these shadows and to create all these subtleties, considering that all your people are legends and they are celebrities and their time frame is very limited. So may I ask you, what was the most difficult photograph and the most challenging process you had?
I have to say it was Andre Segovia, who I talked Life, no, it was Time magazine, into giving me an assignment. He was giving a master class at, I think it was at the Metropolitan Museum. And I arrived there, and the people, the publicity people, wanted me to do the photograph right there in the office. And I said, no, that's not really what I want to do. And I bent down and I told Señor Segovia that I was working on this book and I wanted to photograph him for my octogenarian book, in addition to his photographs with his students for Time magazine. And I waited for hours while the master class went on, and when it was over, I had, during the master class, I had scoped out a place and behind the background of the museum, and I made a little set with my lights. And he was about to walk off the stage, and I went up to him and I put my arm through his and I said, please, Señor Segovia, let me take your photograph. I took him over to my little set. Buddy, who was around the camera, was taking pictures of him at the same time. I think I had just 7 frames of him for myself, and then I did the assignment for Time magazine with his students. So that was very challenging, but I was happy to know that I got the shot.
Well, it's probably also you had a good luck, because he had some satisfaction after his masterclass, so no one really truly aggravated him. So he was in that extra disposition to do something extra. Speaking about artists and musicians, dancers, this is very tough situation because, of course, often their temperament is a leading force for them to be on stage and off stage. So I wanted to congratulate you because obviously the approach which you made was enough comfortable that even though it was a moment, but taking this picture, you created the moments for all of us now. And for me, as a musician, I particularly very, very thankful to you. In fact, we will be using this portrait in our work because when you have an opportunity to see the face and an expression, then performance sounds so much more natural, and you can relate to music in a much closer, more intimate way. So I particularly thank you for that photograph. And I also wanted to mention something which I pointed before, my thoughts about a Rembrandt. Can I ask you a little, perhaps prosaic, academic question? Did yes. you study or did you have any interest to go to the old masters just to browse through their books? What is your, I guess, question is, what is your favorite painter? I'm not going to ask you what is your favorite photographer because I think that is self-explanatory. But I like to ask you about the painter, if you have one you can connect to.
Well, I'm not going to say Raphael Sawyer because he was so close to me, but I like the Impressionists. I love mm-hmm. the Impressionists the best.
I see. And among Impressionists, not that we're trying to perform here artistic, as I said, properly planned lecture, but among Impressionists, who is closest to your soul and your heart?
I like Bonnard very much.
Uh-huh. And in terms of connection with mature Impressionism and early Impressionism, anything there you can point to us?
No, nothing in specifically. I should say that I like the portraitists.
Okay, and that's frankly the answer I was looking for, because there's something I felt you should connect to the portrait skill and to portrait art, because you are truly extraordinary portraitist. Your photography and your skill, intuition, I would say, it's way beyond your craft, makes this photography as absolutely life portrait. Let me ask you, to what extent technical limitations of photography, even taking this modern digital world, is giving you an opportunity to match with your internal desire to recreate on the paper what you see in life?
And the question is,
The question is how you getting to the most of the result, and what is your way to get the best expression to overcome photography technology and get to the maximum of human expression?
Well, as I said, I generally photograph, well, I photograph people in their own environments, but I also photograph people in the studio. And I think it's a little bit different, I have to say, because when I'm photographing people in their own environment, I think they're a lot more comfortable.
Okay.
When they come into the studio, it's pretty stark, you know, there's a backdrop and their lights, and you just have to make a person feel comfortable, I believe.
Yes. To what extent you felt that you had to express your own personal, your personal aura, how much of a difficulties you felt to approach personalities, because there's no secret, especially with a celebrity status, sometimes people feel either too overexposed or they feel too secluded. How difficult it is from the psychological standpoint of view were to communicate with this world?
Well, it is, as I said, celebrities are photographed all the time. And it's a little bit different probably photographing a celebrity than the everyday person who might need a publicity photograph or something like that. I think I told you, the best people to photograph are the elderly people because they're no longer self-conscious, or babies because every frame is different with the baby.
Yes, I remember you mentioned this, and frankly, it's the same curvature goes for the performing artist, because when artist is young, she or he doesn't know why and what's the point to get nervous on the stage.
Uh-huh.
Then it's blossomed with all complexity of artistic and human development. Then close to the older age, it subsides, and a person almost feels, I have nothing to lose, and this is my whole life of expression. In fact, I will allow myself to make a little parallel again with my very first few programs, I guess. I introduced a 100-year-old pianist, Mieczysław Chorzowski, who indeed gave his concert at age 100, and he played just like a young teenager. And fortunately, it is available, and all my listeners can be amazed that we indeed ageless if we are creative. I like to conclude this segment of our program by saying this, that one of the deepest gratitude I have to your work is because you made this, I would say, in the numbers, 80s, quite a significant age, feel ageless. And I'm sure that with your approaching them with ageful expression, you brought so much happiness to these people, and they took that in their own rights. But for younger generation, I wish this book still will be available, and who knows, maybe it will be. But I will assure you that in terms of my students and my son's work, these portraits will be not only used, but they will be as one of the most incredible illustration how we can extend our humanity to the people who need it the most. And these the people on this age group, which gave to the world whatever they could give, and they certainly deserve to have in return. And you certainly provided that. I would suggest that we will listen to a little piece of music, which is written by Julian Lambert. We will take a little spiritual break. There is a lot to digest, to think about. And then we will come back to Nancy's life, perhaps her immediate plans, and then I will ask her a few other questions about our modern society and how she sees the old and young coexisting together. So I think we're ready now for music, and we will call this music with the help of God for me to pronounce it. It's called Presto Rabioso, and it's certainly one of the brilliant example of odd music. Let's enjoy it. We have a little pause searching for this music. While we are searching, I will describe this music, which I hope eventually we'll find. It was actually inspired by the moments in our life, with a dynamic, with a speed which sometimes we cannot catch up with. Something which I felt will be appropriate to complement Nancy's two books, Odd Jobs and Other Jobs. So we hope to find this piece of music, and I think we have it. So here is the odd music. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Nancy, I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think of this music?
Well, you described it as odd. It's different. I don't know if I would call it odd. Very active, very up and down. It, a lot of different feelings in there, I think, up and down and up and down.
You've been very kind, very human about this. To me, it is odd. Maybe because I'm a musician. I have a reason to ask you this question, not only because I wanted to be brutal and to be a source of discomfort for you, but I truly felt so comfortable meeting you. And the whole point of this series of the programs is to find a human associations. I wanted very much to create the environment when air, because of its limitless nature, will connect, which is disconnected. So I thank you for your immediate response, and I will lead that question of mine to another spheres. How indeed do you feel about connection between visual and abstract? To what extent you been inspired by the abstract idea for the book, the first book of Odd Jobs, because the professions which you described there are not, I didn't find them odd in one sense. And if I will take a moment to describe particular one profession which I found very dear to me, it's called dog sniffer. Uh-huh. And I think that even radio would not take away the humor of it. But uh-huh. I would make a comment on this because actually it is such an important profession. The dog sniffer provides the very useful information for the vet mm-hmm. regarding dog smell, and that leads to the dog changing diet, and with the age it gets somewhat more demanding. So this very important question as an order is the main important tool to create a dog's life happier, ultimately for people as well. So I found this profession could be much more useful if it would be spread on the East Coast, because this is, if I understand this correctly, is only established this way, I should say, of testing the dog established in Topeka, Kansas. I would not mind to have it in New York, too.
Well, she actually works for a dog food company, a company that makes dog food.
Uh-huh. So anyone, yes, but the testing system, this sort of speak mental approach, that's, it's only there.
The testing is to determine if their diet is proper and to make improvements on the food that they make if, because they have a number of dogs that are housed there at, what was the name of that company? I'm forgetting it right now, but, you said it was Topeka, Kansas.
Right, but Kansas. I thought that the test, just approach, I think what you're talking about is a Hill's Pet Nutrition.
Yes, that's right, Hill's Pet Nutrition.
Right, so what I'm talking, there are two issues. Number one, just to have this test, such as a small natural procedure, and this test goes so far in a diet. That is my point. I never heard that this test being performed in any other vet's clinic. And I'm a passionate dog lover. Mm-hmm. I think this test could be used for humans as well. Would not hurt. But
we do have the odor, the breath odor evaluator was another one of my. There were a number of jobs that had to do with the olfactory sense, because it's out of the ordinary. I mean, most people don't work with their noses.
Yes. They overwork some other parts and they underwork the other parts, I think.
Right.
Well, there is another one is, it's a hilarious job, but so important. This is artificial inseminator with the cows.
Exactly. It's animal husbandry, but it's not that, see, that is not an odd job for someone who's grown up on a farm or in the Midwest. But for someone who's a city person, it's an unusual job.
Yes.
I've tried to, in these two books, Odd Jobs and Odder Jobs, I really am looking for humor as well as unusual, you know, unusual jobs. But usually there has to be a little bit of humor in there as well.
Well, this is a lot of humor, and I'm so thrilled to say that this humor is not only in America, because if you recall the segment of our conversation led to my comment saying, I wish some other nations would experience your humor, and how delicately and quietly you disappear from the table. I couldn't quite understand why, but then you return with a bunch of books. In fact, it was books which are translated in Russian, Korean, and Chinese. Forgive me if I forgot another language it was translated to.
The Japanese also, and the Swedish.
Wow. So
version.
they all now have all these methods of improving our lives, because in addition to humor, there is a practical application to that. So I found this in a wonderful trio compliments. It's entertaining, it's informative, and it's very easy to read, but not in a simple way, but in the most artistic way. Why? Because your photography is there. So whatever you would not have patience to read about, you see your photography, and this is just so self-explanatory.
Well, as I told you, for me, the best thing, the biggest prize, the biggest reward that I got for doing these books was Odd Jobs was selected to be on the teenage list. I think it was 2003 at the New York Public Library. And I went to a reception there, and one of the young judges said to me that it inspired creativity. And for me, you know, that was worth more than anything in the world, to know that it was doing something like that.
What a privilege to hear that. And
It really is,
and it was, it always will be. I will pick up on that. Speaking about creativity, I'll be honest with you, you inspired my creative thinking. And I was thinking about particular form of art, which I particularly remembered since I was a little girl. I used this word particular perhaps 3-4 times deliberately, not to insult the language, but because I felt that mosaic is one of these very particular detailed form of art. And if you permit me, I will express my own parallel, which indeed has something to do with our conversation, because it's very detailed, incredibly inventive, expressive, and so simple. And I will give you and our audience a little example. By the way, I call it small if enough of it can be big, because it's like a puzzle. A little piece of mosaic is tiny little element. So this, it happened to be that people using their imagination to use this concept of puzzle. And I will just bring a few examples. There is a Ukrainian artist by name Oksana Moss created a whole portrait using a using image of Virgin Mary, and with that she used 15,000 of painted Easter eggs. And I have an opportunity to address this, and hope that my listeners will be able to go further and to look either on the internet or perhaps even find her book. Her name again, Oksana Maas. And even though I never met her, but this idea of puzzle, I feel solved, because mosaic in itself is almost like a little puzzle. So you put these little elements, you create an image inside of you, then you recreate in this outside of you, and then the world see what's going on in your image. Now, there's another humorous example, is the gentleman, also a quite known artist. His name is Helge Lundstrom, who created no more, no less, a huge portrait using just an apples. He combined different color of apples, shape, and it is hilariously funny. He was condemned a little bit because comments were that it's best to use apples for someone who cannot afford to buy them. And there is a point there. So that's where we're dealing with the philosophy of our imagination. But assume that this man could afford to buy this apples, and therefore he used this to his spiritual pleasure rather than to his stomach pleasure. Mm-hmm. So my, a question is to you, do you feel inspired, or do you feel connection to any other sources for your creation besides, of course, tremendous ability to observe people, life? But we will take a moment to relate to sound like music, or to smell like flowers, or some odor. What is negative and what is positive provoking your creations?
Well, seeing is what makes me create. Seeing someone in front of me and wanting them to be comfortable, and, you know, working with someone to get a good photograph. I've always, a lot of what I've done, I have a series of Christmas cards I did for 25 years. They were all Americana. I think I have this sense of humor, which is American in particular. Some of it has to deal with our culture, you know, things we grew up with, songs we knew, but I always go back to the Americana and to the humor.
That's, is a very, complete answer. And going to that, could I ask you a little provocative question? What is your next step? My dream for you, I'm sorry for my imposition, but there are a lot of odd hidden subjects. For example, the process of learning. And the process of learning music instrument is so hilariously humorous sometimes, because either it's little child or adult goes through so many phases, and sometimes teachers would not accomplish on time and with their expectations what they know themselves so well. So the process can be extremely humorous, and I do not mean sarcastic to make fun of someone who wants to learn something well, and someone who puts indeed an effort. But there are moments of this incredibly clumsy, awkward transitions, which can be certainly photographed. Have you ever thought to expand your activities or maybe even go to the documentary?
Yes. I find it interesting what you're saying, though, those moments of uncomfortable or whatever. I once wanted to get from other photographers and use my own mistakes that are made. Sometimes a mistake is made and it's superb. You know what I mean?
And how? I'm sorry interrupting you. This is such a beautifully sensitive point. When Vladimir Horowitz gave his concert in his, indeed, 80s, he made so many mistakes. And you know, we do remember and we treasure his mistakes. I'm so sorry interrupting you, but you just made such a wonderful point. Please go on.
So when you say, you know, gathering those types of photographs or doing a documentary, it just made me think of the things we fall into without even aiming there and just going with it sometimes brings you to a whole new level and a whole new something. When you try to stretch your creativity, you have to go out on the limits. You have to go out of yourself and stretch as much as you can.
This is such a profound thought. It's taking this creative challenge, and it's taking this moment of yourself. We did talk in the previous programs about courage. And that's, I think, if I understand you correctly, that's what you're talking about. Am I right?
Well, yes, one has to have courage to go outside of their normal, comfortable place.
Yes. And it's, of course, very philosophical dilemma. What is known comfort and what is the beauty of discomfort? I think we're communicating. Well, on this note, can we have another interference with pleasant moment of another piece of music? We're almost close to the end, but I think we have a moment for another piece of song, and I will see if we can squeeze it. Can we do that? Yes, we can do that, and then we will have a final moments with Nancy. That was a piece which is devoted to beautiful Mother Nature world. It's called Grazing Horses. Again, it's written by Julian Lampert. We have a remaining moments with our wonderfully gifted, very kind and giving person, Nancy Ricker Schiff. Nancy, I will give you an opportunity to express your final thoughts and whatever you like to leave us with your ideas, your inspiration, and perhaps, again, what do we looking forward to?
I'm sorry I didn't really get to talk about odd jobs or odder jobs more. I started in on my early career, and then we sort of got sidetracked a little bit. But they are two small books that have been my life for a long time, actually. I had started the book many years ago, and then I got, you know, I wasn't finding a publisher. I got discouraged. I put it away, and then I took it out again. So it was a real, real labor of love that took many, many years. And all I can say to anyone is that if you really believe in something, you can make it happen. You just have to keep trying and keep trying, and it will happen.
Nancy, that was a wonderful bridge to our next program. If you will have desire to join us again, and you will talk in a lengthy time about your books, I like to get a little bit more philosophy to that, because it's so way beyond just the humor and practical application to it. Of course, your photography is such a symphony of life, but we like to know actually more about your thinking. You have so much to offer to people who have these creative goals, and life for creative people today is extremely challenging. So I deeply thank you for being with us. And I wanted to thank with that my station, BBS, who indeed helped to make another program with another very special person, Nancy Rico Schiff. And with this, I will say goodbye until my next program on Thursday. And on the musical note, I wish to everyone have a lovely the end of the weekend. And that was Lena Life with BBS.